Welcome, everyone, to Breaking Big Blue. I'm your host, Jordan Ron, on ESPN, ESPN.com, Giants reporter. And we're here with the Marvin Harrison Jr. episode. We're also going to talk to Albert Breer, Sports Illustrated, MMQB, reporter, insider, NFL insider. You're going to enjoy that, I believe. Albert has a lot of good information on the draft. And also, he's a lot higher on the Giants than I am, I'll say that. And I think that most people are right now. And I'm not just talking about, okay, what they might be this year, but I'm talking about why he's optimistic this organization is really moving in the right direction. So stay tuned. We'll get to that in a few minutes. But we're going to talk about something here that I thought several weeks back, I would have said, nah, no chance. That's not happening. You know, no chance they get Giants are sitting at six and have a chance at Marvin Harrison Jr., right? The stud, the star wide receiver from Ohio State, his dad, Colts legend, worked, you know, with Peyton Manning, that duo, that combination, lethal for years, an all-pro, Pro Bowl wide receiver, his son, an even better prospect coming out of Ohio State. Pretty clearly, I know there's some people who think Malik Nabers is, you know, up there or maybe even better, but as a prospect. But let's be fair. Marvin Harrison Jr. is the number one wide receiver in the draft. And to be quite frank, on a lot of people's boards, he's the number one player in this draft. Probably as low risk a player as you can have in this NFL draft. He's got the size. He's got the speed. He's got the pedigree. There's really not much that you cannot like about Marvin Harrison Jr. But let's think about this for a second. It was basically a given he was going to go within the first couple picks for months and months and months. So I didn't even want to go there. You didn't even want to go there and think, okay, yeah, Marvin Harrison Jr. could be available for the Giants with the sixth overall pick. Seemed unrealistic. Seemed silly. But as this is playing out, and this is the way the process goes quite often, quarterbacks get pushed up. They keep getting pushed up and up and up. Well, the way it looks right now, the top three picks are going to be quarterbacks. I mean, they're locked quarterback pick. We're talking about the Bears and Caleb Williams. Number two with the Commanders, who I believe will be Jaden Daniels. And then number three in the Patriots, you could say Drake May or J.J. McCarthy. It seems pretty certain that those three picks are going to quarterbacks. Well, the Giants are in play for that fourth pick, which is the Arizona Cardinals. But so are the Minnesota Vikings. And maybe even a team such as the Raiders or Broncos get super aggressive and try to move up to that four spot. But J.J. McCarthy looks like there's a good chance either him or Drake May, whoever's there, 3-4, 4-3, whichever pick they go, that fourth pick is going to be for a quarterback. Now, it could be the Giants, right? If the right guy's there, I do believe the Giants are interested in moving up to get a quarterback. The right quarterback. The quarterback that they want. Remember, they're going through this process as if they are drafting a quarterback, right? They're bringing in all the top quarterbacks. Caleb Williams, we know he's going to the Bears at this point. But the next three guys all been in for visits. Michael Penix even said he was going to come in for a visit. Now, he might be a little bit later. He might be late first round. He might be early second round. Who knows? But it's looking at the top four picks are likely going to be quarterbacks. Then at number five, you got the Los Angeles Chargers with Jim Harbaugh, who when he talked, the last time he talked and the last time he talked publicly, seemed to tip his hand that, hey, we prioritize offensive line here. So the general feeling around the league, and I've talked to multiple people about this over the last couple of days, probably like 3, 4, 5 people think that fifth pick is going to be Joe Alt, the offensive tackle from Notre Dame. Well, if that's the case, if the first four picks are quarterbacks and the Giants do not move up to get one of those quarterbacks, and then Joe Alt goes fifth to the Chargers, well, guess what? The Giants could be sitting at pick six and have the option to take Marvin Harrison Jr. And I do think that if that's the option and that's the way this plays out, it's a pretty easy decision, and the Giants are going to take Marvin Harrison Jr. And not only are they going to get a wide receiver, they're going to get the top wide receiver in this draft. Good chance the top player on their board overall in Marvin Harrison Jr. What was once a pipe dream now seems like a realistic possibility, right? If you asked me a week ago, I probably would have said my most likely Giants pick, and you know I do this every year, I come up with the most likely Giants pick, I'll publish something the week of the draft, would have probably been Malik Nabers. You know what? It might ultimately come down to being Marvin Harrison Jr. as the Giants' most likely pick at number 6 if they stay at 6. Now, if they move up to 4, obviously it's not going to be Marvin Harrison Jr. Where they move up to 5, that would likely be for a quarterback, J.J. McCarthy or Drake May. But the fact that the Giants are sitting there right now, and this is all a possibility, and if you go and look about, and Albert Breer will be on in a couple minutes here, but if you go and look at the quote that Joe Shane gave to Albert Breer, I believe that interview was done at the NFL owners meetings, the NFL's annual meeting several weeks back. But he says, we have multiple needs. We're going into year 3. People assume we're going quarterback, but we have other needs. If the quarterbacks go 1-4, then we're getting the second best position player, not quarterback, at 6, which is okay to me. Well, there's a good chance that second best position player turns out to be Marvin Harrison Jr., especially if the Chargers go and get Joe Alt with that 5th pick. Now, somebody may trade up into the 5th, but there's a lot of contingencies here. But the fact that this is now a realistic possibility, it seems like a realistic possibility now that the first 4 picks are quarterbacks, somebody trades up. Let's say it is the Vikings that land that number 4 pick. They draft J.J. McCarthy with number 4. Then the Chargers go number 5 with Joe Alt. The Giants are sitting there at number 6, and it's an easy choice. Marvin Harrison Jr. With that being said, on to the next one.
Hi, this is ESPN's Mike Greenberg, and ESPN Bet is ready to take you through all the biggest sports moments this spring. The official sports book of ESPN has exclusive offers and markets from Scott Van Pelt, Stephen A. Smith, and me. From the playoff intensity to finally getting out to the ballpark, there's no better time for sports fans. Sign up today, and new users get $100 in bonus bets for making any sportsbook bet. Download ESPN Bet today. What a play.
Must be 21 plus and present in select states. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. Terms and conditions apply. See app for details.
Tired of ads interrupting your favorite sports podcasts? Good news! Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music, included with your Prime membership. Amazon Music offers the most ad-free top podcasts. Enjoy shows like First Take, Pardon the Interruption, and The Low Post, available ad-free and uninterrupted. To start listening, download the Amazon Music app or go to amazon.com/ESPNpods. That's amazon.com/ESPNpods to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
All right, we're going to talk to Albert Breer here, SI, Monday morning quarterback, you know, covers the league exceptionally well. Albert, thanks for taking the time today. Appreciate it, man.
You got it, Jordan.
Draft time of the year. That means a lot of crazy things out there. But first, I want to start with, you wrote a piece on the Giants this week, right?
Yeah.
And my take from, and we've had this conversation, we went out to dinner recently, you're higher on the team than most overall. Yeah. We're talking about overall outlook of the organization and where they're headed. What is it that gives you that optimism and that allows you to get to that point?
Well, it's a couple of things. Number one, like, I don't think they overreacted to the bounce that they got in year one, with Brian Daboll and Joe Shane. And I think that they acted with some restraint in their first offseason. Now, you know, it flies in the face of that, of course, the Daniel Jones contract. But outside of that, like, I think you see where they stuck to their guns as far as having a long-term plan. And even with the Jones contract, they gave themselves some runway to find a new quarterback. It was expensive, but they gave themselves some runway to find a new quarterback and some control over their situation at that position. The second thing, and this is like really specific, is I very much believe that like the best teams are built through the lines of scrimmage. And if you're not solid in those areas, you're really nowhere. And so, you know, now I see where you've got 5 players who have high-end talent, who are all 26 and younger, who are under contractual control for the next 3 years, who are on the roster, or a few years, who are on the roster. Mm-hmm. That's Evan Neal and Andrew Thomas on offense. Admittedly, Evan Neal has a ways to go.
They're crossing their fingers on Evan
Neal. There's talent.
They've made an investment for sure.
Yeah, there's talent there, though. And then on defense, you know, Brian Burns, Kayvon Thibodeau, and of course, Dexter Lawrence. And so I just think like that's where every team has to start. And when you're building a championship team, you know, yeah, the quarterback obviously has to be taken care of, but you want to be really good on the lines of scrimmage. And, you know, I think that's honestly like what the Eagles have done so well for so long. Like if you look, you know, the 4 players that were sort of constants in Philly over the last decade were Lane Johnson, Jason Kelce, Brandon Graham, and Fletcher Cox. That's not a mistake. You know, you covered the Eagles, Jordan.
The amazing part is I covered those guys with the Eagles, and they were still there as of this year.
Yeah, which is philosophical. It's philosophical. You know what I mean? Like, so, like, I just think, you know, over the first 2 years, Brian Daboll and Joe Shane have been able to basically put a foundation in place, and some of it was inherited, of course. Dexter Lawrence and Andrew Thomas were inherited, but you know, focusing on making sure those areas are taken care of and you're in a good place in those areas. And even, you know, with the center they drafted from Minnesota last year, even on another level, being able to continue to feed those areas. I just think it puts them in position now where, you know, maybe they draft a quarterback this year, maybe they draft a receiver, but they're ready to make those sorts of moves. You know, like they're ready to, like, you know, if you're New England right now, I don't think you can afford to take Marvin Harrison or Malik Nabers third overall, you know, because a receiver is sort of a finishing piece.
Right.
And now the Giants have built up the areas that are really vital to your team to a point where now they can take a swing on players like that.
Right. And they at least have Daniel Jones. Like, he has proven he could play in this league and start in this league. So, yes, it might not be the long-term solution, but it's at least the solution for this year if they can't get a quarterback. So, obviously, all roads always take us back to the quarterback because that's how this league goes. Mm-hmm. So, I'm curious where you stand on how the Giants feel about their quarterback position, because what I've been saying, and I don't think their evaluation of Daniel Jones has changed that much. He started 5 games from start to finish last year. Right. I think if you'd say, oh, they think he stinks, that's crazy. They paid him last year. That's just recency bias. But I do believe the concern there is, hey, can we build our team long term around a guy with that injury history, and especially with the 2 neck injuries? And then on top of that, he tore his knee, which is like, you know, just like icing on the cake. So I'm wondering what impression you have of the Giants quarterback position at this point.
I think he's Alex Smith in Kansas City, if that makes sense. Where
there so you could find someone better.
I but like, hear me out here. Like, Alex Smith in Kansas City was so important to them because Alex Smith made it so you didn't have to force it in any given year at quarterback. You could sort of look at the landscape, and if you weren't in love with the guys there, then you could pass, which, you know, allows you, instead of like, yes, we're taking one this year, it allows you to kind of take a 3-4 year outlook on the position, right? So the Chiefs waited and waited and waited until they felt like something really special, you know, came along. And it's not easy to get that right. And they obviously got it right in trading up for Patrick Mahomes. But by the time Matt Mahomes got there, then they had built up so many other parts of the roster because they weren't spending capital at quarterback, right? So, you know, then Patrick Mahomes steps into a fully formed situation. That was year 5 for Andy Reid, was Patrick Mahomes' rookie year. And the first year Mahomes really played was Andy Reid's 6th year. So that's like a half decade of team building that was in the bank when Mahomes actually got on the field. And I'm not saying the Giants are going to wait that long to find the guy who's eventually going to replace Daniel Jones. But, you know, I do think there's some power in having a guy where, you know, you look at him and you say, we can win with him. We may not be winning because of him, but we can win with him, which I think is what Alex Smith was for the Chiefs. And we can build culture and we can build up the roster. And then, you know, if we've done a good enough job, we can really get aggressive and go get the guy when we see something truly special there. And, you know, now I guess the operative question then, Jordan, would be, do they see something really special?
Right.
You know, in Drake May or JJ McCarthy or whoever else in this year.
I'm sure they see something special in somebody in this draft. The problem is then you have to be able to get that guy too in this draft. So I think that makes it a little more difficult for them.
Yeah. And I think it's, so I feel pretty comfortable saying that I feel 100% comfortable saying the Bears are taking Caleb Williams.
Right.
I feel pretty comfortable saying that the Commanders are going to stick at two and take a quarterback. If you ask me who that quarterback is today, I would tell you it's Jaden Daniels.
Agreed.
You know, and so like then you get to 3 and what's New England going to do? You know, there are teams that have investigated moving up. The Giants have made those phone calls about moving up. You know, the Vikings have too, the Broncos, the Raiders. So there's a market, you know, with teams trying to move up there. So how do you view Drake May and JJ McCarthy? Do you view Drake May as good enough to go up and get? Are you willing to compete with the Vikings to go up and get that player? And I think what's so interesting about this, the situation the Giants have created at the top of the draft, is they've done everything you would do as if you were going to take one, right?
Right.
Like when they brought McCarthy and May in, that was like obscenely early. Like you know this, Jordan, you've been covering the league for a long time. 30 visits generally happen in April. They did those in the beginning of March, right? Like, so they bring those kids in. Then they, you know, they've gone and visited some of these kids. They've worked some of the kids out privately. They've shown up at the pro days. Like, they've done everything that you would do if you're planning on taking one. And so, like, now the question is, how sincere is this? And is it, we're going to take one at six, or we're going to move up to get one, or we're really thinking hard about it? Or is it, we want to become that team that everybody's got to leap over to get one, so another player falls to us, which there's logic to doing that too, right? Like, so whether it's right or wrong for the Vikings, the Broncos, the Raiders, whoever else, there's a perception out there that you got to get past the Giants to get the fourth quarterback.
Yep.
So if the Giants are really just going to take a receiver, well, that serves them, because somebody jumping them to go and get the quarterback would guarantee that Malik Nabers or Marvin Harrison would fall to them.
Yeah, it totally seems, as we sit here, we're taping this exactly 2 weeks from the draft, is that four quarterbacks are going to go some way, shape, or form in the top five picks, like ahead of the Giants at this point. And whether it's the Giants that move up, like if the first three go quarterback, that somebody will probably feel the pressure to move up and grab a quarterback. Do you agree with that?
I think so. I mean, I would say quarterbacks go 1, 2, 3. My guess would be Drake May goes third, either to the Patriots or the Vikings. And you hear a little rumblings that the Giants really like him too. You know, we'll see how real that is or not. I think Drake May probably goes third, and then McCarthy goes somewhere between 4 and 6 would be right. My guess.
So I've heard you, you had this discussion up in New England, and somebody actually mentioned it to me last night in the league. They said, yeah, I think that McCarthy's going to end up going third to the Patriots.
Yeah.
What do you think when you hear that? And do you think at all that the all this JJ talk is more media driven, or is this actually exists from the teams?
I think New England's done a good job of sending out a lot of different signals. I'll put it that way. Like, they haven't shut the door on trading out. They've done all the work with May. They've done all.
Wait, hold on, real quick. When you say about trading out, would it take that offer? Would it, in your opinion, would that have to be like a monster godfather?
It would be. Now, I mean, like, you know, if it was the Giants going up, obviously that looks a little different than if it's the Vikings coming from 11, right? Like, with the Vikings coming from 11, I think it almost has to be 11 and 23 and their first round pick in 2025. And I'm not positive that gets it done, right? Whereas if you're the Giants, like, now, like, say the Patriots really like JJ and they think the Giants are going up to get Drake. Well, now all of a sudden, if you fall to 6, like, you're still in range, you know, to go and get JJ, right? So, like, then, you know, you're like, what the Giants are going to have to attach to their first round pick to move up is going to be less. But I think it was still, like, absolutely, you know, have to include another first round pick. I think it would, is my feeling on that. So, you know, like, there's all kinds of moving parts there. And I do think, like, there's, you know, an ownership component to this too. Like, Elliot Wolf, who, you know, has been given personnel control, he's not like he hasn't been given like, yes, you're going to be the GM after the draft. Like, he hasn't been given a new contract.
That's crazy, by the way.
And so, and it is, but like, and even if Robert Kraft isn't like saying you are taking a quarterback, you know, if you're Elliot, aren't you sort of in the spot where it's like, well, like, I know what my owner wants. And if I don't do what my owner wants, do they like really open up the job after the draft? Right. You know what I mean? Like,
you're
like,
pretty much doing what the owner wants.
Just say, like, from a human nature standpoint, right? Like, you know what you like. I feel like even like in our everyday life, we usually know what our boss wants. Right. Yeah. Like, so
I keep my job if I do what my boss wants, or right. I do what I think is ultimately right, but I'm probably not going to be here any much longer.
Yeah. Yeah. So, you know, I think that's could be part of the equation too. It's, I think it's complicated for New England for sure.
There is a bit, the more I talk to people, the more does seem to be, and I know Drake May was a huge prospect, there seems to be a bit more questions about him than probably the other three top quarterbacks in regards to just he has that. It seems like, okay, that's the one that people could see probably being a bust a little bit more than others.
Boom or bust, I would say, is like, yeah. And so here's what's fascinating about him. I think he's like, so I'm now at the point where I've talked to a lot of people about this. Like I would say what's most interesting is like the comparison sort of like a mesh of two different things. Physically, he's Justin Herbert. His play style is Josh Allen. And so he's really, really talented. What was fascinating was like, so he dealt with some of the same things Justin Herbert did his last year in college, right? Like where, you know, like they lost a bunch off the team from the year before. And I think the coordinator changed in both spots. It definitely did at North Carolina. And there were a lot of NFL people who looked at it and just said like, you know, I mean, I'll be black and white about this. A lot of NFL people have said to me like the scheme sucks, right? Yeah. Like really, really bad scheme. And so
you're going to excuse away the mistakes essentially.
So, right. But how did each guy react? And what you saw with Herbert was the spectacular plays that Herbert had made earlier in his career started to disappear. So you didn't have bad plays, but you also started to lose the spectacular, right? Mm-hmm. With May, it was like the opposite. It was like you kept the spectacular plays, but all of a sudden now these bad plays start popping up, you know? Right. And so what are you more comfortable with? And that's where the Josh Allen thing comes into play, because that's sort of what Josh Allen was his last year at Wyoming, you know, where there wasn't a lot around him and he had to carry the team. And, you know,
wasn't the best year for him, actually. I remember his final year.
Yeah, his last year was not the best. Yeah. Yeah. And a big part of it was like a lot of things changed around him, you know? So I think that that's what's so interesting about Drake is like coming out of last year, like, no question, the guy's the number two pick in the draft. Like I've had some people say, like, he's one of the best prospects at the position over the last few years. And then a lot of things changed around him this year. I mean, even like to the point where like Tez Walker, and I'm sure you followed this, his number one receiver had an eligibility question for half the year, you know? So it's just, he dealt with a lot. And what's really fascinating about that to me, Jordan, is that like, you know, I think Josh Allen would tell you what he went through his last year at Wyoming, where there was so much on his shoulders and he had to carry the team, was great training for the NFL, was great training for having to pick himself up when things went wrong, was great training for knowing like his teammates had to rely on him and he had to be able to lift them up a level, right? So put it this way. How many games last year did J.J. McCarthy have to be the best player on the field?
Zero.
How many games did Jaden Daniels have to be the best player on the field? Probably some, but not all, right?
Yeah. They're obviously stacked. They have two wide receivers that are going in the top 15.
How many games did Drake May have to be the best player on the field? All of them?
Every single one.
Right? So, yeah. Like, and there's a difference in that, you know? So, like, I think that that's what, like, it's something where you look at it and you say, okay, is this a negative? Like, and you see some bad stuff here. But is this a kid like having to adjust to having to be the best player every single, maybe on every single play to give his team a chance in some circumstances, you know?
Yeah.
And so like, I just think that there's like an interesting thing there where when we're talking about like from an NFL context, like the difference between the quarterback you win with and the quarterback you win because of, right? And that's like the difference between maybe Daniel Jones and what the Giants would hope their next quarterback would be, right? Some of these guys do have experience. Like Caleb Williams last year, like had a really tough situation around him. Like Caleb Williams had to be the best player on the field a lot last year. Right. So like that experience might've like wound up looking bad on tape, but is that good experience for him to have down the line? I think it's an interesting, you know, piece to the larger puzzle.
Yeah. Cause obviously some people are going to look at it and say, look, those are some of the cracks of why he won't succeed. And the other people are going to say that, you know, look, he was able to this is what he played through. He's going to be able to use that to build on it. And so,
right.
But that's,
like, yeah, it's just a different context through which you're playing.
That's the beauty of this is that the likelihood is we just named the top four quarterbacks. They're not all going to be a success. You know, one or two of them.
The numbers tell us tell us like maybe one will make it, right?
So then there's that second tier and the likelihood, you know, we're talking about Bo Nix and Michael Penix. The likelihood is that one of those two guys ends up being legit and probably better than one of the guys drafted early.
Yeah.
Where do you think that second tier is right now? Like, is that mid first round? Are we looking at the end of the first round? Are we looking at, so, do you think it could sneak into the second round still?
Yeah. You know, like that position works different than other positions too. Like if you look at like over the years, the numbers show you there's like a massive number of quarterbacks that go in the first round, and then there aren't a lot in the second or third round. All right. So like you'd ask yourself, well, why does that happen? Well, I'd say normally it happens because if you think a guy can be a long-term starter, you're going to take him in the first round. If you think a guy's a backup, you probably aren't going to take him in the second and third. Right. So, you know, like what ends up happening with these guys sometimes is like, you look at him and say, okay, he's going to go in the top 20, and then things don't work out for one reason or another. And all of a sudden the guy's sliding into the third round because right. at that position, the dynamic is a little different because there's only one of them on the field at any given time. So you're either a starter or you're a backup. You know, and that's why I think the draft stock of both those guys is volatile. Probably Nick's more than Penix. Penix, you know, I had a scout call him, you know, in January, a 3-point shooter to me. And I thought that was a really interesting analogy. This is before the championship game. I made some calls that week on McCarthy and Penix to ask about their NFL stock. And, you know, like the thing the scout said was it's weird. He really his like accuracy deteriorates like underneath and on intermediate stuff. And so then I asked around to a couple more scouts about it, and they said, yeah, that's what we see too. And then I turn on the championship game, and what did Michigan do? You know, Jesse Minter, who's got NFL background, Michigan's defensive coordinator, is daring Michael Penix to beat them underneath, right? And to go on 10 and 12 play drives, and they couldn't do it. And that's even with Roma Dunze and Jalen McMillan and Jalen Polk, you know, it's so there's that question there. And what I've found over the last few weeks, as the scouts sort of killed Penix in January and February, when I was talking to him, like the coaches have sort of built him back up over the last couple of weeks. And the best explanation I have for that is like coaches sort of look at it as like he has these qualities you can't coach. You can't coach anticipation.
What can he do? Right now,
you can't coach the toughness. Yeah, you can't coach the toughness. You can't coach downfield accuracy, and we can work on the rest of it. So it's sort of interesting that way. So Penix, I think his ceiling is probably somewhere just outside the top 10, maybe 13 to Oakland or to Vegas. Sorry, I'm becoming my dad.
I do that all the time.
I'm becoming my dad calling the Colts Baltimore. But yeah, so like I think Penix could go as high as the teens, but could slide in the second round. Where I think Bo Nix, like, I don't know. I've talked to a lot of people who think he's a backup. Like, and that doesn't mean he's a good player, but you know, one kind of common refrain is if he's going in the first round, it's to Denver because stylistically he fits Sean Payton. I think that there's a good chance he slips well into day two.
Right. Yeah. He's the one that seems most likely to slip at this point. Let's just finish on this, right? Because we sit here and we talk about the wide receivers. I mean, sorry, quarterbacks. Then that just leaves, okay, there's these really good wide receivers.
Yeah.
Okay. We know Marvin Harrison. We've been talking about it for years. He is a A1 premium prospect.
Yep.
It's sort of like, okay, he's a step above everybody else. That next group is Malik Nabers, Romo Dunze.
Yep.
The more I talk to people, it seems to be that Nabers is the guy that more people around the league like. Why do you... So, I see you're nodding. So why do you agree with that?
Yeah. You know, it's interesting because I've like sort of like you try to call BS on stuff that you see every year. And I've sort of felt like, you know, with Caleb, Drake May too, you know, Marvin Harrison, they've been on our radar for so long that all that's left to do is tear them down, you know? And I think this actually happened. Like teams have admitted to me this happens with them too, is like when you've been watching a guy for long enough, you start to notice little things, you know, that maybe you aren't noticing in a guy that you're getting fresh eyes on. So, you know, I really thought like a lot of it was that. And the more I've talked with people about Nabers, now there are some off-field questions with him, you know, that does exist. Right. But the more I've talked with people about Nabers, I'm starting to wonder, so you hear Marvin's the best receiver prospect to come along since 2011, at least, right? And so that was Julio at 6 and actually AJ Green, 2 picks before him at 4. And so like, I've sort of gone from like, oh yeah, like, you know, people are just saying that on Nabers to know maybe legitimately this is AJ Green and Julio Jones. You know what I mean? Like maybe we do have two of them this year,
right?
That are at that level. And, you know, I think Nabers, the thing that's interesting about Nabers is like, I remember I had back-to-back phone calls on him, you know, it's a few weeks ago, and one guy compared him to Jalen Waddle and another guy compared him to Ja'Marr Chase. And I was like, how is that possible? Those are two such different guys. And then as I tried to amend that and talking to more people, they're like, no, like there's elements of both in this game. Like, holy crap. You know, like, so, you know, I think he's not as strong as Chase. Like Chase is abnormally strong for a receiver, but he's a strong player and he's got great run after the catch. And like, there's just like a lot to like about him, you know? So he's a very different player than Marvin. So I think it's sort of like part of it is going to be what flavor you like. Do you like the traditional big, like prototype number one receiver, or do you like the more like run after catch guy?
Yeah. The explosiveness both very, very of Neighbors good. Stands out. There's no doubt.
What's that?
The explosiveness for Neighbors.
Yeah. And so I think that's what it is. It's like Marvin is like, there's not very many weaknesses in Marvin's game. But like the one area where he might be a little less than he is in other areas, you know, people would say is run after catch, and that's where Neighbors excels. So, yeah, I mean, it's interesting because they're just, again, like just such stylistically different receivers. But I think both are super elite. Marvin is still to me, and I'm unbiased on this. I think he, like, because of the quarterbacking last year at Ohio State, like I think the quarterbacking, if you go back and actually watch it, probably cost him 300 or 400 yards. That's how good he is. But like, you know, I think Neighbors is certainly an elite player in his own right.
Yeah. I mean, he just seems to be in a different level, does like everything great. It's just, just watching him, it's impressive. He makes it look so easy.
Yeah.
Like that's the crazy part.
What's really crazy is that Dunze would be the number one receiver in a lot of classes. And I think he's probably a notch below both these guys.
That's what it seems like, at least at this point. Yeah. So it'll be interesting. Is there any one guy? We'll end on this last one. Is there any one guy that you're looking at first, second round, maybe that teams seem to be higher on than the general public that sort of stands out?
Think on that.
There's obviously, you know, a lot of wide receivers.
Yeah,
even so, into the second round there.
A.D. Mitchell is one that's kind of come up a bunch, and I'm still like a little bit away from like getting deeper into the first round. You know, I generally talk to teams about this stuff, like coming out of the draft meetings.
Right.
But like among the receivers, if you ask me, like A.D. Mitchell is the one where I look at it and I'm like you just kind of consistently hear pretty good stuff on him, and he's big and he's fast and he just checks a lot of boxes. So I think some people had looked at it like, is he a second rounder? And like, would it surprise me if he was the 18th or 19th or 20th pick? That wouldn't surprise me. So there's one. You know, I think you'll see seven tackles at least go in the first round, which is obviously a really high number.
That's a huge number.
Yeah.
Huge.
A big number. And then, you know, like the two corners, I think, like, you know, Quinyon Mitchell and Terrion Arnold from Toledo and Alabama. Like, I think both those guys have a chance to go there in the teens. You know, it's a good corner group. Like there's a good depth at corner. You know, like, so I think that, you know, like it's not like you can't get one in the third or fourth round, but I think those two guys are probably a notch above the rest of their position. And here's the other thing. The other thing that's kind of interesting when we're talking about trading around, because of all the kids going back to school, because the way NIL has affected this, and I know you've seen it, the list is much shorter of underclassmen declaring, because of the transfer portal, because of NIL, like a lot of people I talk to feel like the draft class falls off after the fourth round and like basically drives into a ditch. And so will teams be more, I guess, liberal about moving their fifth and sixth and seventh round picks around? And does it become harder to move because teams don't value those picks? You know, I think there's that dynamic that's going to exist over the weekend too.
Yeah, no, that'll be interesting to see if, you know, I want to move up in the third. I'll just dump my sixth round pick. We don't need 2 6th round picks, whatever it may be. So
yeah,
Joe Shane gives him an opportunity to do the opposite, because they only have 6 picks in the whole draft. There's only two. Well, teams
it's like if you view your 6th round pick as equivalent to an undrafted free agent, like, you know, if you don't think there's a big difference, then like you're probably going to be pretty open about moving those sorts of pieces of draft capital.
for sure. Little last intrigue for the draft right there. So we appreciate it, Albert. Thanks for the time, as always. We'll do it again soon, man. Thanks a lot.
All right. Thanks, George.
On to the next one.
Now, let's talk about the play of the week. The pressure to follow up Hypnotic and Cognac, weighing heavy on the team. Hypnotic was in the cup, blue and ready for the play. And boom! Añejo Tequila came in with a smooth assist to Hypnotic's tropical fruit finish. Shaken, strained, poured. It was green and good! The playmaking splash shifted the tempo. Another great cocktail from the Hypnotic team. Every season is Hypnotic and Tequila season. Hypnotic Liqueur, Bardstown, Kentucky, 17% alcohol by volume. Hypnotic reminds you to think wisely, drink wisely.
That was a pretty good conversation there with Albert Breer. One thing that really stood out there to me, well, there was a lot that stood out there, but in regards to what the Giants are trying to do or planning to do with their first pick here and their top pick here, Albert said the Giants have made those phone calls about moving up. Now, we kind of assume that, but to hear it and know that lets you know, okay, you know, they are seriously considering, under the right scenario, of landing a quarterback in this draft. Because that's what those, you know, calls up are all about. And they've gone through the whole process. You got the ownership approval. You know, connect the dots here. That's what this is all about here. So the Giants, at the very least, are thinking, contemplating, and wanting to some degree to draft a quarterback. So anybody who sits there and is going to tell us otherwise at this point that quarterback is not an option, I think that's silly. And as I've been saying now for a while, pick 3 and 4, that's the spot. If the Giants are going to get their quarterback, they're likely going to have to get their quarterback in one of those two spots. I just don't see them. I think originally when the Giants started this process, they thought that J.J. McCarthy might be there for them at 6. And as we've gone along here, they've kind of come to the realization that's probably not even realistic, that in order to get the quarterback, it's going to cost more than just your number 6 overall pick. And that kind of leaves them in a spot of saying, okay, well, how much are we willing to put into this to get a quarterback, to get J.J. McCarthy, let's say, in this scenario, this hypothetical that I'm creating here? How much more aside from number 6? How much more draft capital, current or future, am I willing to put into it? Where then it's, you have to weigh, at what point does it get detrimental to building this team long-term, which Joe Shane has been adamant over and over again about wanting to build this team through the draft. You supplement it with one or two pieces a year, big pieces a year, but you build the team through the draft. Now, we'll finish this up here. A little quick Jordan on the beat. Tell you what it's like to cover the Giants, work for ESPN, or cover the NFL in general. Real quick, I'm just going to give you a rundown of the plan here leading into the draft. Okay, we doubled up on the podcast this week. Hopefully, we're going to do that each of the next 2 weeks leading into the draft. Going to do some sort of weekly updated mock drafts in the next 2 episodes as well, because I think that exercise is always valuable. Like, we should go over some of the scenarios that we think are possible, that I'm hearing are possible. And things change. Things change, Mox. A little Varsity Blues reference right there. Things change, Mox. So what we might hear 1 week might be different the next week as information keeps spinning around in circles. Now, I will be honest. In general, I usually stick to my guns on the information. Okay, what I've heard and what I believe, I try to stick with. Because if you go and you just, you know, fly with the wind when it comes to draft rumors and information, you'll be all over the place. And trust me, there's some reporters out there. There's some Giants reporters out there. They blow with the wind. If you go look at their stuff, they'll have every guy at some point or another as the guy the Giants pick. So I really try not to do that. Now, I'll have also release my most likely Giants draft picks, which I do every year. We'll do that the week of the draft. I'll go over that here on the podcast as well. So we got a lot coming up. It's going to be a fun few weeks here. Also, there's usually a little free agent movement right around this time, before and after the draft. People like to actually get things done. They don't want to sit there and be left hanging out to dry. So there might be a little something here or there, as Jordan Phillips, defensive lineman, formerly of the Bills, recently signed with the Giants, gives them some more defensive line depth. Now, not anything if I were them I would count on and bank on definitively, but hey, it gives them depth. It gives them options. With that being said,
That's it for this episode of Breaking Big Blue. Thank you to Albert Breer, Sports Illustrated Monday Morning Quarterback Insider, NFL Insider, does a great job. Obviously, he's buying the Giants. He's buying stock in the Giants right now, the future of the Giants. I'm not quite there yet. Let me see what they do with that quarterback position, how they plan to fill out this roster. I think one of the most important things for Joe Shane is how he's going to be able to move and navigate the board. He's proven the first 2 years as general manager that he's really good at navigating and moving around the draft and collecting picks, adding picks, moving up when he likes a guy. And he's going to need to do that this year. And as Albert said, the end of the draft is going to kind of be interesting. But he's going to need to do that. I would be proponent of, especially if they don't get a quarterback this year, finding as many ways as possible to add draft capital next year. Move around in that second and third round as much as humanly possible and get draft capital for next year. We'll talk about that in the next few episodes. You're listening to Breaking Big Blue. As always, like, subscribe, tell your friends. Want some nugget? If you want the best nuggets out there, Giants nuggets out there, Giants information out there, this is where to get it. You're listening to Breaking Big Blue. I'm Jordan Ronan. See you next time.